The Business on RTÉ Radio 1 with AIB. We know that your focus is on your business. That's why ours is on supporting you.
Well, from China's Men in Black to what's likely to be a colourful coronation kicking off soon in London, with plenty of Union Jacks flying in honour of King Charles III. While many will be glued to proceedings, there are others that would much rather avoid it. David Pegg, investigative journalist with The Guardian. What about you? Will you be watching?
Hi there. Yeah, I'm actually watching it right now, just as I'm speaking to you. I've got it on the TV in front of me.
And you sound quite energised and exhilarated, but I want to talk to you a bit about money, David. This coronation, there have been estimates put on it that it's going to cost between 50 and 100 million. But I suppose a lot of people, when they think of the royals and wealth and money, there's a tendency, and I know I would have had this feeling about it myself, that their wealth is really kind of, it goes with the job, it goes with the crown, and indirectly goes with the state. But that's not necessarily the case.
No, it's not. So what we've been reporting on over the last month or so, we've run a series called Cost of the Crown, which is looking at the private wealth of the monarch. So for over 100 years, the monarch has had a separate legal identity and law. It used to be the case that the monarch was the monarch and everything they owned was sort of theirs. But for about since Queen Victoria's time, there's been this concept of a kind of private monarch that has his own house. So whereas something like Buckingham Palace, it might be kind of better associated with the monarch, you know, it's not his. He can't sell it. That's distinct from something like Sandringham, the estate that they have in Norfolk. That is his privately. He could sell it tomorrow if he wants to.
And when you say he could sell it,
this sort of private wealth,
and you, let's say Sandringham or Balmoral estates, you know, huge, very valuable estates. If after the coronation at some point, you know, the king decided to quit the job, abdicate, go off and do something else, he could stay in Sandringham. He could sell, he could do whatever he wanted with those assets, not Buckingham Palace, but with those other assets.
Yes, they're his privately, you know. And so what our project was looking at is trying to disentangle this public and private wealth, because it's actually extremely difficult to distinguish between the two in some cases.
And what about things like horses, stamps and jewels? Are they privately owned?
To the best extent we can tell, yes. So we looked at about 8 different types of assets, including the ones you mentioned. Horses, we think he owns about £27 million worth of horses. He inherited those from his mother. Those are not owned by the state, they're his. Stamps, the family has what is kind of widely considered to be by far the world's most authoritative and impressive collection of stamps. Several experts told us they think it's worth at least £100 million. But the reason it's such an impressive collection, as it were, is because of their public position. So it was started by George V, that stamp collection, just to take one example. And he used his position as king to get access to mint condition stamps. And they've gone into his private collection. Now, you might argue that that's perfectly harmless, but it encapsulates this very tricky problem that you get when you're trying to disentangle, you know, what belongs to the Windsor dynasty privately and what belongs to the British people.
Even if you can establish what is owned by them privately, let's say Sandringham and Balmoral and the horses and the diamonds, the question it raises, I suppose, is how did they accumulate that personal wealth? What was the origin of that? Was it because of the position they held? Were some of these things actually gifted?
Yeah, so they were. And probably the most tricky parts of the private wealth to untangle is these things like gifts. So to give you one example, the jewels that are going to be worn, we're told, in Camilla's crown today at the coronation, the Cullinan 3, 4 and 5, these are gems from the largest diamond ever discovered in South
Africa.
What's
that worth, David, do you know?
Off the top of my head, no. I mean, I think we got to something like 180 million for those. But, I mean, those are private possessions, right? We think, as best we can tell. But the reason the family has them is because they were given as gifts by the government of South Africa when it was a British colony to Queen Mary, you know, the king's great-grandmother, I think it would be. So by any modern standard, if that were to happen today, you know, these would obviously be considered official gifts. But because it happened such a long time ago, we think that they're kind of private. But it's kind of difficult to disentangle, you know, why. And it's not helped by the fact that when we asked the palace you know, are these private or are these public? They refuse to tell us.
When you talk about that transparency issue, if a private individual, whether they're the Queen or the King of England, leaves personal belongings in a will and they're inherited, normally that would show up in a public record. But in their case, it doesn't. And I presume one of the reasons behind that is whatever's in the inheritance is privately owned. It would be a way of establishing what's privately owned, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would, but you're right, we can't see it. So in Britain, normally, if you leave an estate and it needs to be divided up by your executors, it goes into what's called probate, and then the will is public. That's, you know, a standard part of British law. It's so that people can check whether they're entitled to something, or so that the executors, you know, don't run off with the money. But for about 100 years, all of the wills of the Windsor family, not just the monarch, but actually quite minor members of the family as well, have been sealed by judicial decree. That's not based on any law. You know, this is just something that has happened in about a century's worth of secret hearings. We've tried to challenge it recently in the case of Prince Philip. The Guardian brought a legal case and we weren't successful. But it's
you sound
one
like
of
you're
the
trying very hard there, David.
We are. We've put the legwork in. But it's just one of the ways in which, you know, this wealth is hidden in a way that's not true of other families.
Yeah, well, there are lots of things, I think, that are not true of other families as well. David Pegg, investigative journalist with The Guardian, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.